This is the Wine, Beer, and Food pairing with Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Steve.
Sitting in for Mindy here. Our guest today is Chef Aaron Foreman from Table 6 at 6th and Corona in Denver. Hey, Chef Aaron.
Hello, Steve.
What did you bring us today?
Well, I brought you a couple items. We have first sort of a just a nice little salad, spring salad, a bib lettuce with pickled eggs, house bacon lardon, fennel, and a buttermilk dressing. And then it's also got little fried capers on top. And then we also did just a little little sliders for you, little pulled pork with a tamarind chutney and house-made bread and butter pickles on milk dough buns.
Did you catch that, Carolyn?
I did. I'm thinking I need a fork.
Tamarind chutney. I've never even said that word before.
I've had tamarind when I've been in Central America a lot, and they use that in smoothies. Yeah. And it's kind of different.
Different, yes.
It's got, if I remember correctly, it has kind of like this tangy finish
tangy,
on it.
Tangy, yep. And that's for barbecue. We like that little tang to mm-hmm. it, you know. So it's got a little sweet and sour tang.
I had a question about the bib salad here. Bib lettuce, it looks really like thick. Is there a thing called butter lettuce?
Yeah. It's similar or the same, really. So it's this time of year. This is like the perfect time to get it, in my opinion. But it looks thick, but it's really bright and fresh and little earthiness tones to it. The bacon just brings out that, you know, sort of richness to it. The capers are just like a little pop of salt and crispiness. And then the pickled egg is, you know, I like some pickles. And then buttermilk just is really nice. Buttermilk dressing is just really nice and creamy and adds to it. It's not overdone. It's just really straightforward and simple and shows this time of year all the good ingredients that are coming in.
Chef Aaron Foreman from Table 6 is keeping it light, and as we're into spring towards summer, Carolyn.
I feel like you can never go wrong with either sparkling or rosé, and I think we've featured a few rosés recently, so I wanted to do some sparkling wine. It's springtime, and there's a lot of graduations, and it's a very celebratory time, and not that you need a celebration to have sparkling wine. But I think it's always a great starter to a meal and really can accompany a lot of different dishes. So that's why I chose this wine.
Are you breaking a rule? Is there like a sparkling wine, it must be a celebration?
No.
Or if you just live right, that's what your role
is. You know, I think anymore, yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's a great way to start a meal. You don't even have to spend a lot of money. You could have a little Prosecco that is a little bit fruitier. You can spend a lot of money and something that you want to maybe commemorate a really, maybe it's a special occasion, maybe not. Maybe you just have this bottle of wine and you feel like having a great bottle of wine with some toasted popcorn, which can be great with champagne. This can't be called technically champagne because, as you know, it's from South Africa and not from Champagne, France. But it's made in the traditional method that champagne is made. And it's 100% Chardonnay, which champagne, Blanc de Blanc, is a 100% Chardonnay. So if you ever see Blanc de Blanc on the label, you know that in that sparkling wine is Chardonnay. It could be in another wine, another champagne, it could be a Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, or a combination of those three. I constantly am surprised. There's a lot of changes happening with wine all the time. Rules are changing, technology changes, or we go back to traditions. So it's kind of hard to keep up.
Sure.
Aaron was noting that I have notes, and I'm like, I just can't keep up with all the changes.
Oh, that's part of the reason I got into the restaurant and wine industry is I knew I would always be challenged, and wine was definitely one of those things that was going to be ever evolving and always just sort of keep you on your toes, and you learn something new every day.
I learned a lot today about this one. So I love this wine because, like I mentioned, it is from South Africa. And I think a lot of people have the impression that South African can be kind of cheap and funky wine because, you know, I don't know, maybe even just 5 years ago, a lot of it, the quality wasn't really good quality, but they have made huge strides. The land has basically gone back to people instead of co-ops. This being one of them, this was a German landowner, and the winemaker, Jasper Rotz, bought into it about 2011 and changed it from conventional farming to organic, and then in 2012, biodynamic farming. He's got an interesting video out there that talks about how he tried to cultivate the soil between the rows and sow some seeds, and nothing would grow because there were just so many chemicals used. So he changed to organic farming. Now he can grow anything, and he does. He grows a lot of like hay or rye and different plants that help not only nurture the soil but prevent infestations of insects. And as you know, South Africa has gone through a huge drought, and it's really affecting their farming and their winemaking. But it's interesting because these guys, because they've been taking care of their soil now for 8 years, and they're doing some wood chips and some composting on top of the soil, their moisture retention in those areas is 30% greater. Even though they're experiencing a severe drought, the vines are very healthy. And I think that's a testament to the need to nurture our land rather than strip it.
When you are traveling to vineyards and you get out there, and I know a lot of people are going to be doing some wine tours over the summer, over the summer months, I envision you looking at the thickness of the vine itself and, you know, just fat, juicy grapes. Is that...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, it's everything. And that's what I think the winemakers are trying to impart in the bottle, is that you've got the soil, which you might notice is like really gravelly or rocks or sand. It can be like a beach out there even. The vines might be a little tiny trunk that's all gnarly and has a bunch of bark on it. It could be something more manicured with a trellis. And then, of course, you've got the grapes, which hopefully you're going to see like these really robust grapes. And if you're lucky enough, and Aaron can tell us a little bit about travels because he just returned from Italy. But I remember being in Tuscany in the fall. And, I mean, the aroma just permeates the air. You can just smell it everywhere. It's pretty amazing. So, yeah, if you're lucky enough, you want to notice all of those things. I think a lot of times people just go to a tasting room and one thing looks like the other. And sometimes it does, but that's another really cool thing about this Long Ridge, is that they don't use any commercial yeast. So that is means that their yeast in their vineyard and in their cellar is different than their neighbors. Whereas if you have a conventional wine, you're all picking from this pool of commercial yeast, and yeast affects flavor. So, you know, you're getting a more uniform taste among different brands
from
or
the same
different
region.
The same region. And here what they're trying to do is pick out something, the individuality of each wine.
Chef Aaron, what do you notice when you're out there on the tour at the vineyard or on the farm? There's
well, I mean,
because everything is back to the farm now, and you're looking at where it actually comes from.
That's where it's at. And going along with what we've been talking about here, is it really starts in the vineyard, and you really see it all over the world. Really, if you pay attention in the vineyard, and it's a labor of love, because it is not easy to do these things. Yes, you can have some old school bush vines that are just going to be squirrely and be themselves, but when you have like trellis systems and the weather changes constantly, you have to know your terroir, you have to know what's in the soil, you have to know the weather patterns. Like nowadays they've got like little apps for if they think there's weather coming in, like hail. Hail is a big thing these days.
Yeah.
At least in Piedmont, where I was at recently, you see them. They're starting to put nets over the vines to protect them, because those things can just really. So it's basically just all hands on deck constantly, all year round, really.
Kind of like the restaurant business, I'm sure.
It is. Yeah, 100%.
I'm thinking about the work you do with farms as well. That kind of care, the impacts of the weather change and the climate change, and how apps are helping farmers, get their stay on top of things. Over at Table Six, I'm noticing the big question, pork or beef, and you're walking through the stables and the feedlots and all that. There's a whole different thing.
We work with specific farmers and ranchers, and then our purveyors are our purveyors have been with us for 15 years now, so we work very closely with them. And it's when you're running a restaurant, you have to be on, it's like my chefs, where I just left the restaurant at 8 this morning, and we do dinner 7 nights a week and a Sunday brunch at 10:30 at 6 in Corona with parking in the back.
It's 8 in the morning. They're getting ready for dinner?
They're already getting ready for dinner. So, and they're waiting for the purveyors, waiting for the produce to come in, check the fish, check all the stuff that's coming. Because it is that. I mean, that's the type of restaurant we've decided to do over 15 years, Not every restaurant wants to do that way, and they do perfectly a great job as well. It's just, that's just our little way of doing things.
So when I'm looking at this food, and we still have to taste it, and I've had this salad before, and it's delicious, but you look at it, and it's presented just perfectly, and the lettuce is,
Tell the chefs that?
Oh, yeah, hopefully they'll listen, and they can hear me saying that it looks beautiful. But for the home chef, because we always want to talk about people that are cooking at home, I don't know, my salad never looks that way. I never get my lettuce that dry. I mean, what are some of the tricks? I know you have to have, you're starting at 8 a.m. I'm starting at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, it's like
two kids at home, so.
It's that quick fast, you definitely want to rinse, and then you get it on some simple paper towels, just let it absorb. I'm sure you do all that.
Not always.
And then I put in the fridge just to let it sort of set up a little.
Okay.
And then the key thing with salads, just don't overwork the lettuce, with the dressing. A lot of people have a tendency just to, throw it all over.
Bruise it up.
Bruise it up.
It's delicate. It's kind of like the opening the champagne, and it should be your lover.
Your lover's side.
Lettuce is your lettuce.
Your lover, maybe.
Yeah. So it's
treat it kindly.
Just treat it kindly. You want to get a little coat on it, but you also just want to let it do its own sort of talking.
So do you get this locally?
Mm-hmm.
So is that from a greenhouse then, or are
that's
they starting to come out of?
Yeah. Okay. But they're coming out now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I always wonder about that. I hear about farm to table, and I know we live in Colorado, and I'm thinking, because I see lettuce on the menu, which, and maybe you can talk about, we have greenhouses and such, but we don't eat just root vegetables all winter. So how does that work?
We just go seasonal. Greenhouses are a big thing, because we are landlocked and we are in a high elevation desert.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have, produce out here is pretty amazing, because we are in a desert. We're at 5280. to be able to grow, so we just go with it as the season goes along. We're a restaurant just what's seasonally appropriate, and you'll see it goes from light springy then to summer. It'll get a little a little more mixed of light to heavier. Then the fall, it'll start getting a little more weighty.
Mm-hmm.
And then the winter, it's put on the pounds and
your insulation, got to get insulated.
That's
the Bears.
That's how most restaurants do it. They just go with, especially when you're landlocked. The fish, that's a tough one, because you need to get the goodness, so that you work really closely with whichever purveyor you trust.
Mm-hmm.
And you just say, okay, this is what I want. okay? And then they say, okay, but this is what's really good. And then you say, all right. So like spring, it's like halibut, mm-hmm. you know? Halibut is, this is the time for halibut. But then it goes salmon, you know, tuna. So it goes on through the.
So how often are you changing the menu?
Oh God, every day.
Mm-hmm.
The supply chain issues are just endless.
Well, yeah, so we basically, you know, the whole menu won't change every day, but of course it's going to change completely today.
Chef. Until today. Even though this looks great, it won't be on the menu. No, I'm just joking.
I don't know.
It will eventually.
They're going to surprise me when I get back.
It will eventually.
No, I think it should be because that looks like summer. It looks like a little hamburger, like a little slider.
The pulled pork sliders we did for the Kentucky Derby party.
Fun. I bet it was a blast.
Chef Aaron Foreman from Table 6 at 6th and Corona. And this is the Wine Baron Food Pairing with Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits. Carolyn, do I need to go get some forks and knives so that we can do this eating part
yes,
properly?
Yes, because I want to definitely try.
Because I'm not sure.
Great. Yeah, I want to try the food and wine pairing, so I definitely want to taste this together. What would you normally serve? Like if a table said, oh, I'm just going to eat something light today. I'm going to have a salad and these pulled pork sliders. What would you suggest?
I love the call. I drink bubbles all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just that was a discussion. We went to a really famous bubbles house in Italy called Contrado, and they've been making sparkling since 1867.
Wow.
Okay. And they do all the hand riddling. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's the method Champenois, you know.
Each bottle has to be turned periodically so that
like
the.
Like an eighth of an inch.
Yeah.
Like
wow.
Over.
Just an eighth of an inch.
Yeah. Thus, one guy in this place does it. So,
and the purpose of that is to expose the wine to the different sediment and lees in there.
And work it towards the neck. Work
all
the
cement.
And so basically, you just really, with sparkling, you come to, especially done in this method, you come to appreciate all the work that goes into it. And then also the diversity of, I'll drink bubbles with a T-bone, mm-hmm. you know, like if it's a big like Blanc de Noir or something like made 100% Pinot Noir, something that's big and broody, I'd love it. You know? It's a versatile wine. I think it's a perfect choice for this time of year, but I think you drink it all year round. It's not just a celebration thing. It's just a good way to get your palate warmed up and just enjoy the nuances of the good food in front of you.
Yeah. So when I first tasted this wine, the one thing I noticed immediately was the nose. I just love the nose. It's super aromatic. So this wine has taken about 4 years to make. And if anybody is in business, you know that it's hard to have a product that you keep for 4 years. That's why why sparkling wine and champagne can be expensive. One big reason why a lot of it's expensive is because there's giant marketing budgets behind labels. That's not the case in this particular wine. I think their marketing is probably pretty minimal. And if you look at the color even, it's kind of this, it's sort of a golden color to me. And
it's more rounded. Got
some very balanced. When Aaron was talking about all the different flavors in his dish, you know, like even buttermilk has this creamy but tangy. The salty with the capers, but the crispy, so in the fennel, and butter lettuce or bib lettuce is sort of soft, and then you've got a pickled egg. I mean, all of those different tastes are in your mouth. I was thinking when you were describing it, I was like, oh, that's going to go perfect with this because you get a lot of these different components when you're drinking the wine. You know, you've got this sort of creamy, almost nutty, yeasty part, and then you've got a really crisp, bright, effervescent. And so, we kind of take apart things when we're tasting. But for the consumer, the normal person, they're busy chit-chatting or whatever. Hopefully they're just, enjoying it. And they're like, oh, this was really good. I just drank the bottle and ate the whole plate.
That's the way. The tongue has so many parts. You all have studied the tongue, but when it all goes in there, it's just together.
It all comes together.
What do they call an Asian food?
Umami.
Umami.
Happy family.
Yeah. Sounds like yoga.
Carolyn Joy of Joy Wine and Spirits, Chef Aaron Foreman from Table 6. How do you want to do this?
As you said,
Chef Aaron, don't drown
it.
Yeah,
look at that.
Don't drown your salad.
I love this idea of putting the dressing on the plate.
Yes.
And so not on your lettuce.
It's kind of like a little alternative to dressing on the side kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can just put like a little olive oil, salt and pepper in it, you know, just to, you know, round it out a little. But this is kind of a neat way to.
So you're not dousing
You're not dousing it, and you're not bruising the lettuce. And
I'm sure you're going to hate it that I cut it.
No. Do you. But I think with this wine, it's an amazing pairing.
Yeah, because sometimes it's hard to pair salad and any sort of vinegar dressing with wine. Of course, that doesn't prevent us, any of us, from having wine and salad ever. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to look at the other components. You've got those salty capers, which I love. I love salty and sweet, for one. But I think that the acidity probably in this with the bacon, and I'm guessing, and the smoke.
And even with a little pickled egg.
Carolyn has a plate. Of course, barbarians that we are, Chef Aaron and I, right off the serving dish. It's wonderful. And the salt in the capers and the bacon.
Yep.
It's right there.
So, like, you know, some people like to salt and pepper their salads. This is a kind of a cool little way to do it without overdoing it.
Is that tarragon?
Tarragon.
I love tarragon.
Yep.
And that's a spice that a lot of people don't use. It's super subtle, but it's great with salad.
And it makes it pop a little.
Mm-hmm. And I think you put it on eggs. What else do you use tarragon with?
Oh, gosh.
Everything?
Yeah.
Take Steve to school. Tarragon, new for me.
You've probably seen tarragon. A lot of times it'll be like a tarragon vinegar, but I don't know if you can taste this part of it.
And get a little the fennel on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Brings sort of a little licorice to it. Anise.
So it's interesting because 2 months in a row we've had salad in the morning, and I love it. It's great.
Well, it's this time of year.
Yeah.
You know, gosh.
As you said, after a summer of putting on weight, chilies, and the hearty warm food that's needed on cold days. We are turning the corner.
Yep. But you're still not, you know, you're still getting some good richness, some good, you know, as you said, umami vibes to it. And but it's just basically at the end of the day, it's embracing the season, embracing, you know.
I like the idea, too, of using different lettuces, because I think so often we get sort of cornered into using either arugula or a spring mix or, God forbid, iceberg, which I can't. Anybody that knows me knows I cannot stand iceberg.
Don't wake yourself up, Cobb salad.
Ugh, God. No, I'm sorry. I don't. Maybe with romaine. I know that's terrible, but.
Hashtag no iceberg.
Yes.
Send your letters to Carolyn Joy.
And I'm just maybe a lettuce snob. But I do love to have this because it's a totally different texture and flavor. And, and it, you know, sometimes my kids will be like, oh, God, another salad. This gives them a choice. So well, tell me how you prepare the pork.
Yep. So, you know, good dry rub, slow roast. It's pretty simple.
Pork butt?
This is butt.
Mm-hmm.
Shoulder? This is shoulder, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. This is shoulder. And then, you know, just let it go for like 6 to 8 hours in that area, depending. And sometimes they'll smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, there's a little more of a wet. And yeah, just let it do its talking.
Tell me a little bit about Proximus.
You've been so, Joy Liquor has been so generous to support my, I made a tequila with my business partner starting 12 years ago. It's called Proximus Tequila. You can go to tequilaproximus.com. It is 100% blue agave. It is one of those tequilas that we only use the purity. It's a double distill. We use the Corazon. We don't use the heads and the tails. Even though it's 100% blue agave, you can make it, you know, physiologically as good for your body as possible, because I knew I was probably going to be drinking a little bit, and I want to live. So
in the distillation process, there's this thing called heads and tails.
Right.
And what you try to do is you try to get, you kind of, you don't siphon it off, but you don't start collecting until you have this midstream part.
Yep.
And I think that when you're drinking certain liquors.
And it can be 100% blue, but it can have heads and tails in it. And those are just the parts of the, after the distillation, that are susceptible to impurities.
Do you think that the not only does it affect the taste, but is your theory that, you know, maybe you don't feel as good when you drink some of those liquors?
Know, yeah, it's one of, just for me personally, physiologically, I think I react to the better to the Corazon.
Which means heart.
Heart. Mm-hmm. You got it. Proximus is named after, sort of a morphed name, named after Proxima Centauri, which is the closest red dwarf star to our planet. So it's sort of proximity.
Mm-hmm.
So to your heart sort of thing. But yeah, we wanted to make something that still represents where it came from, the terroir, the land, because it does take 8 to 10 years to truly mature the agave. So that's another thing with tequila. You have to understand it's not like wheat or potatoes. Like you have to wait on these plants. So that's part of the reason why it might be a little more expensive. But we've been able to do it where it's micro production. We are able to get it on the shelf. I think you guys got it for about $35 to $36 on the shelf for what's in that bottle. If you see Proximus, little red label with Carlos's wife on the cover, get that thing.
Ba ba boom. That's his wife?
That's his wife.
Ooh.
Yep. get that thing, because that is obviously biased, but trust me, all the hard work that goes into that. That is small production. We've got 250 cases on its way up right now. Hopefully we can get it through the border.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it would be fun to do a segment on tequila, because
I would love it.
Just like wine, spirits are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I have to bring notes because I just can't keep track of everything. And, the process for beer, wine, and spirits is changing, you know, where it's grown. You mentioned terroir just for tequila and spirits. But I think tequila is unique because potato, rye, hops, you know, these different things that are grown, I don't know, maybe they don't have the same terroir, maybe they do. But you mentioned, you know, like an agave plant. And this is one of the things that is threatening tequila and mezcal.
Sure.
Is that agave takes so long to grow. It's such an art for those two products, and they're also becoming more and more popular.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting a mezcal?
Mm-mm. Nothing against mezcal, just that's another investment.
Chef Aaron Foreman visits from Table 6. They're at 6th and Corona in Denver. Their website is table6denver.com. Joy Wine and Spirits hosts tastings every Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, generally between 3 and 7 p.m., and they're located at 1302 East 6th Avenue at Marion. Their website, joywineandspirits.com. bibcast.com. Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Chef Aaron.
Thank you, Steve.
Cheers.
Cheers.